miserable, ignorant little lives, while I, who am a special seeker, take the last step. Thank you very much. How can you have the transcendent illumination at 3 o'clock if you don't go on walking? It won't happen. You've got to go on walking. So I went on walking with the misery getting louder and louder to me, and said, I went to a corner, and there in the middle of the street was an epileptic with no arms and no legs, just screaming, monstrously, with his mouth foaming. And in that scream, something happened to me which has never happened to me in my life. I finally got it. I had nowhere to run. I had nowhere to go to anymore. There was no mystical solution. There was no program. There were no glittering divine elders who were going to give me instruction. There was no Rumi. There was no Christ. There was just that scream and all it stood for, all the horror and the misery and the injustice, all the burning forests, all the unspeakable cruelty of what you and I are doing to the world, all the poor people, all the people dying of AIDS, all the rape children, everything was in that scream. And as I was, the shit was going down my feet, and my feet were bleeding, and I couldn't go on, and nothing worked. Finally, I started to sob in a way that I have never, ever sobbed. And fortunately, the young man next to me knew that something was going on. He got a taxi, he took me home, and I sobbed for 2 days. Because finally, I had admitted to myself, I have been talking for years about the potential danger to the planet. I have studied it in all of its forms. I know what's happening in the cosmetic laboratories, how the animals are being tortured. I know how they're being kept in their horrible conditions. I know why the people are burning down the forests. I know why the tobacco companies kept back the information that was killing people for 30 years while they went on their foreign holidays. I know it. I've studied it. I thought I had felt it. But there comes a moment on the path when God, instead of you taking you up to the top of the mountain, finally, finally opens your heart, strips you, and allows the full horror and the full suffering of the fully real to go right through you. Jacopo da Todi said that when Mary stood by the cross watching her son be crucified, the same coltello, the same kitchen knife went through her as was going through him. And pain and misery and injustice are a kitchen knife. They make horrible wounds when they really attack the heart. And the whole point of the path I discovered in those 2 days was not to be on some transcendent bliss, streaming light to the ignorant masses who could then adore me and come for my few brief words of wisdom. The whole point of the path was to live with that cry in my ears, and not to shirk it, and not to deny it, and to dedicate everything that I am to the ending of the conditions that cause that cry, as far as it is possible, to being a warrior for love and justice in the middle of an endangered and menaced world. And I've come to believe that nothing about love is real unless we're prepared really to enact it in the real. And all of the spiritual versions that talk about contemplation and meditation being enough are really lying to us, because unless we become mystical activists, unless we become activists committed to the transformation of the real world and dedicating our lives to that transformation with all our resources, all our thoughts, and all our actions, and unless we couple that with a radical mystical practice, a radical mystical wisdom, a radical mystical stamina, and a radical and increasing mystical awakening, you and I are going to die out and to take most of nature with us. The future depends on being able to hear the cries of the miserable, the cries of the despairing, the cries of the burning, and on really hearing them, and really dedicating everything that you are, and everything that you know, and everything that you have, and the whole of your life, to being someone who is strong enough to say with that great yes that we began the whole seminar with, also a huge and fearless no. A no to injustice, a no to false spirituality, a no to all the conditions of power that keep beings enslaved and animals tortured and nature burning. And so I beg you to take that journey. It won't give you consolation. It will give you huge joy, huge grief, and an abiding sense of just purpose in the core of your life. And I wish it for you. And I pray it for you, and I hope to God you will hear something in what I've said that's real for you, so that you will know where you are. I've tried to talk in two ways. Timelessly, about the timeless nature of the stations of the path. And in this time, 2001, when we are faced with massive desolation, if you and I, who feel and know something, do not now act politically, economically, socially, sexually, emotionally, in every area of our lives, to turn up as real divine human beings in service of love in action. Thank you very much. Don't clap. Just take it in. Microphone. Is the microphone there? Ah, great. Jacob. I hope that meant something to you. Did it mean something to you? Yes. I hope you feel unpatronized, because when I get talked to and vanilla ice cream is spread in front of me, something in me rages. When I have the real meal, I feel as if at last I'm being talked to as an adult, and I trust you enough to expose to you the real path as I understand it. Because you're adults, you have the responsibility to wake up to these things and to do something about it. And it's glorious to wake up and to do things. It's the glory. Wait a second.
Just maybe direct a answer or talk about if there's political bullies in the world, like maybe this country. I mentioned Saddam Hussein, but other Hitler, other beings. Yes. Other extremes, but what is the direction that the world could be taking and how to, on a personal basis, in a community, in a worldwide basis?
Gosh, okay. What you need are several different kinds of service. You need the service to the divine. You need the service to your divine self. You need the service to your friends and to your family and to your pets. You need the service to your community, and you need the service to the world. And all those forms of service have to be linked consciously in the core of your life. And the service to your community begins, and the community being the nation in this case, begins by looking at the facts, begins by looking at what Bush is now doing, begins in really being crazed with worry as to what it might mean to open up the Arctic refuge, as what it means to put in charge of the environment someone who would drill the lawn of the White House if she felt that there was oil underneath, to what it really means for putting the foxes in charge of the chickens, oil people and the corporations in charge of the most sensitive, the most difficult of all possible conditions. What does it mean to open up the coral reefs outside Florida to drilling? What will it mean to keep alive, as he said the other night, the blessing of American life, which is to waste so much energy that the whole of the environment is being polluted? What will it mean, and how will you face those facts? What will you do with the FBI's covering up of the 6,000 documents about Timothy McVeigh? What does that show you about how justice works in this country? What does that show you about how power works? What does it show you about what is really going on? What do the tobacco covering up of the tobacco things show you about how corporations work? Do you really imagine that the tobacco companies are the only ones covering up terrible information like that? They were the only ones who were caught. Imagine what the others may be doing. Imagine what the energy companies may be doing. There are rumors that they have killed people who found alternative sources of energy. There are rumors that there are these alternative sources of energy, much cheaper, much less polluting, exist. But because billions of dollars depend upon foul and polluting sources being kept up, the world is kept in ignorance, and the powers that be keep that going, knowing that it's killing the planet. So the first thing you really have to do is to stop being naive and stop thinking that your spiritual life exonerates you from the responsibility to be half awake, because it doesn't. It has a responsibility to be fully awake, to be fully awake to all the horrors of power. And that goes for the spiritual movement also, which is astonishingly naive about the tremendous extent of guru abuse and the tremendous extent I have seen it in every single tradition I've been involved with. The Tibetans have had a whole extravaganza of guru abuse of every kind. So have the Hindus, God knows, the Christian churches, they've been putting their hands up, choir boys, bell bottoms, for years and years and years. And unfortunately, also the Sufi movement. Every single movement has still caught in a patriarchal structure which encourages and exonerates really severe forms of abuse, which can cripple people and can, in certain situations, even kill people. So wake up. Wake up to where you are, to the facts of the environmental degradation, to the facts in which our way of life keeps that degradation going, to the facts of the horror and cheapness of the cheerfulness philosophy of life that refuses to look at the negative, and to the way in which a false spirituality only serves that evil. Just the other day, I was saying something like that, and somebody got up and said, "It's very moving what you say, but don't you think you focus on the negative and that gives it power?" Focusing on the negative gives it power. What garbage! Your only hope of getting rid of the negative, of exercising the negative, is by facing that it exists, that it's real, that it has tremendous power. How will you work with your shadow if you don't think you have a shadow? Facing the shadow of our society, of its politics, of our power structures, of our way of life, of our spirituality, is tantamount to a crucifixion experience. Because when people start to wake up to just how they are being manipulated and cheated and bullied, and how their minds are being raped, and how they're being kept in a state of cheap servitude by a media entirely dedicated to trashing their minds with triviality, then a huge formless outrage begins in the core of the self. And that's why spiritual practice is so important, because when you see the extent of the manipulation, you'll be tempted to despair. And if you don't have a spiritual practice waiting to mold and form that despair into conscious action, then you'll be lost, because you'll have to have that there. And then what you have to do is to really make your practice so strong that no revelation of the extent of the malice and the evil and the folly and the shadow will defeat you, because at that moment you know that the divine is also totally real. And at that moment what you do is to look very soberly at yourself. What are my gifts? What are my resources? What can I, with my gifts and resources, really do? Which networks am I attached to? Where can I be most radioactively nuisance-like? What can I cause most happy damage in? Where can I rile the most powerful people with the most deadly accuracy? Where can I really serve? And every single person in this room has an area which is uniquely theirs, which belongs to their gifts, which belongs to their resources, where they can be of enormous help once they have taken the trouble to wake up and to see the situation really, and once they have really dedicated themselves to the kind of inner work that will keep them strong. Because the fact is that if you go out there, I mean, I know it, and anybody who's doing this kind of the work in the world knows it, and I'm sure many people in this room know it. As soon as you go out there, and as soon as you try and do something, all the negative voices come heaping and dancing in glee upon you, and all your former friends jump up and down upon your prostrate body with stiletto heels and do the most incredible death dances around you. There is a real force that does not want any of this to happen. Wake up and see it and stop denying it. And really know that unless you are very strong, you will be defeated by the inevitable disillusion that you will meet when you talk of virtue in a corrupt world, when you stand for justice in a world swimming in corruption. And you have to go on. You have to go on like the great ones have always gone on. You have to go on with the wisdom of the serpent and the innocence of the dove, giving everything all the time, because that is the only way to be real. Does that make sense? I mean, what can I say? You don't want me to... I mean, there are books out there which will give you a sweeter version if that's what you want, but what use would it be? It's like telling somebody who's suffering from cancer that all they need is an aspirin or two. They're going to get better. They're not going to get better. Our culture is not going to get better without a massive transformation of the heart, which leads directly to a massive spiritual, political, economical, sexual revolution. And that's why we're here. to be in the crucible of that revolution and to hear about it and to know that it's possible. Another one. Let's have one more question. Can we have a lady? And then you can, because I'd love to hear from the woman in the back.
Hello. This question came into my mind when you spoke of when Jesus was on the cross and Mary felt the
same
knife.
Kitchen knife.
And
yes.
This question just popped into my head at that moment, which I wrote down.
Which brand of kitchen knife? Not a Calvin Klein one, not one of those, you know, no.
Would Mary have agreed?
Agreed?
Would Mary have agreed with the angel before the conception if she'd known what would happen? And I feel as if in the course of what you just spoke of, you actually answered this, and in my heart I hear yes, but this question had just come to me and I just wanted to put it out there.
I just want you to, everybody in this room, just to picture something. I want you to picture a 13-year-old girl in a small room, which you can still see in Israel. And it's the most extraordinary place. It's just a small room. And to this 13-year-old girl comes the divine saying, you will be the bearer of a new consciousness. Do you seriously imagine that she wasn't also given at that moment the whole picture? I believe that she was given in a flash the entire unfolding, including the betrayal, including the horrible betrayal for 2,000 years of the essence of that consciousness, because covered over by the boys' club, transformed into an elite, made into an exclusive religion. I think he was given that vision also in the temptation. One of the things that the devil said to him, which is not in the scriptures, is, you will go through all of this, you will be crucified, you will be resurrected, and they won't care! And are you still prepared to go through all of this for them, to give them this deathless example of what love really is? Because if you are, you're a fool, you're an idiot, because they will never learn, and they will betray the revelation, and they will take your gorgeous name and use it to humiliate homosexuals and to humiliate women and to torture women and to burn women as witches and to organize wars against other people and to justify the dropping of bombs that can kill 100,000 people in a second in your name. And they'll probably write the name on the bomb. Are you still prepared to go through it? Of course they both knew. And of course they said yes. Because that's what you have to say. Because it's the only adventure that could possibly save anything. The boys' club will go on, the elites will go on, the power games will go on, the killers will go on killing, the murderers will go on murdering, the betrayers will go on betraying. But if more and more people don't say that primal yes, knowing the potential defeat of everything that they care about in this world, but knowing that the divine loves them for their effort, then we cannot survive. And Mary knew that. And that is why next month, I and a few other people are creating a church called the Church of Jesus and Mary, which is going to be the church that, for the first time in history, announces her full divine motherhood. No more quibbling over Russian or Latin names. Should she be the co-mediatrix or the co-redemptrix? Shall we look at the various? She's been appearing all over the world for 500 years, and she's been seen and known and felt as the divine one, with all the powers and glories and furies and majesties and tears and outrage of the divine one. So that's, and it's so strange, when I first realized that that was what our church was going to do, I cried and cried and cried, and I thought of that girl at 13. And of this incredible journey that she's taken, not just in her life, and not just up to the crucifixion of her son, but then to keep the whole church together, and to witness, and to bring down by the force of her prayer the Holy Spirit in Pentecost, and then to knit matter to her spirit, and then to be assumed into heaven and take the whole of the world with her symbolically in this massive marriage of matter and spirit, and then to be transfigured as Jesus, the man, was transfigured into the cosmic Christ. So Mary, that girl who became a wife, who became a mother, who became a grieving mother, who became an old woman, has become the face of the Divine Mother in time. Isn't it an amazing journey? But then the thought came to me, and it's your journey, and it's my journey. Because they didn't take that journey as specially chosen divine beings who were initiated on some 54th level up there and then breezed through here doing this amazing work on our behalf. Otherwise, it would mean nothing. They took it as a part of us, as the best part of us, and their challenge is to each one of us to take it also so that we can know the agony and the work and the glory and the transfiguration. Is that... satisfy you? I'm going to read you one poem and then let's go. And I think it had better be a sweet, calm poem, don't you think? Thank you for being such a generous and attentive audience. You really gave me permission and I took it. And this poem is by Kabir, and it's called The Story of Love. And this is for Llewellyn, because this is so much what he is talking about so beautifully. The story of love can never be told. It is the sherbet of the dumb man who eats it and smiles silently. Without any earth and without any seed, the tree of divine love just grows and grows. Heavy with a million radiant fruits, my lover picks for me to taste. The story of love can never be told. When I calmed my mind and entered my heart, the love of the Lord leapt like a flame within me, and all my old ideas and beliefs just blew away like chaff in the wind. It wasn't because of anything I am, and it wasn't because of anything I did. But only because of him and his wild, miraculous grace that I learned at long last the lesson of love. My coming and going have ended. My mind has melted in the mind. Don't ask me to speak anymore. The story of love can never. I'm going to sign books now, so come and join me.